Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Basketball Fiends Podcast, un orgulloso miembro del Our Esquina Podcast Network. I'm Jesus Acevedo Jr. and my co-host all the way from Chi City is Mr. Alex Aguilera. Alex, we're recording late Thursday night after having just watched Game 2 of the NBA Finals. I have a rum mule in my hand. What's going down, Alex?
Not much. I mean, I got water, so.
Come on, Alex. You're letting me drink alone here.
I had wine earlier.
Okay. Oh, look at you. Fancy. I'm over here. I got a rum mule. You're like, I had a wine.
Yeah. It's this bottle I get from, that we get from the Sam's Club. It's actually real good, though.
Hey, Sam's and Costco, man, they know what they're doing when it comes to wine, you know, because they know they're a consumer, so.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice sangria. Woo!
Oh, no, I get down with some sangria. Wine, not too much. I feel sometimes it gives me a headache, but sangria, I can get down with some sangria.
Yeah, but I think it's the Moscatos that give me a headache.
Moscatos, huh? I don't know. Which one's that one?
I'll probably drink it. It's kind of bubbly. It looks,
it's like sparkling, right?
Kind of, yeah. I'm so. Learning my wine, so I'm no expert or anything, so don't quote me on if I know what a Moscato is.
Well, let me ask you one question, though, since I can't ask you about drinks, right? Have you backed that thing up, Alex?
Oh, my God. I mean, yes, I'm fully vaccinated as of May 1st.
I think that you can say you backed that thing up. I've backed that thing up. I backed it up twice, actually.
Yeah, I got two doses in my arm. On when you say vax that thing up, I feel like you're talking about something else. I don't know why you would want to get vaxed up there, but if that's you, I mean.
I'm not saying that's what happened to me, but hey, if there's people that's their preference, who are we to judge?
I don't know if that's medically safe, but if it is and that's your thing, go for it.
You'd be surprised. I think I've seen many articles over in my lifetime about how many things doctors pull out of people's rear end, to use a better phrase. So yeah, so I wouldn't put it past it if that's where people decided to back that thing up, you know?
Yeah.
But you know who also backs that thing up was the Phoenix Suns. They backs that thing up all the way to a Game 2 victory in the NBA Finals. A commanding 2-0 lead, Alex. You know, what were your takeaways from Game 2? And, you know, we can talk about both games, but Game 2 is the one we just saw, Suns a commanding 2-0 lead.
So, I mean, I think just with the Suns, I mean, it's such a complete team, just – so much depth. I mean, they're pretty deep. But I will say, though, with the loss of Torrey Craig, that we'll get into a bit more later on. I know that hurts the Phoenix Suns, but you look at the starting lineup, and man, do they produce. You had Jay Crowder, who dropped 11 points after he didn't even make a field goal in Game 1. Mikal Bridges, my goodness, I love this guy. He had a career night. I want to say he dropped 27. Was perfect from the free throw line. 8-for-15 shooting, so he had a game. Devin Booker, a little slow in the first half, was a little quiet, but found his rhythm in the second half and finished off with 31. And, of course, CP3 doing his thing, efficient, you know, 10-for-20, 23 points. He actually had, like, 6 turnovers. Which
was very unusual.
Right. That's a little out of pocket for him. But overall, a good game. And then when you look at Milwaukee, man, Giannis, I guess that injury didn't slow him down because the man dropped 42.
It was pretty much a one-man wrecking crew for the Bucks for most of the game. You know, I think we saw the graphic was the most points scored in a quarter, 20 points in an NBA Finals in the past 25 years. That's some high company. I think it was Kobe Bryant with 19 and LeBron with 19, if I'm not mistaken. Besides that, you know, Chris Middleton, 11 points. Negative 15 plus or minus, Chris Middleton, 11 points. You know, after you and Drew Holiday carried the Bucks over the Hawks in Game 6 and Game 7, Drew Holiday, 17 points, struggled to get those 17 points. And I'm starting to wonder if perhaps fatigue is starting to set in, especially for Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, because let's be honest, they're not getting much from Jeff Teague. And on top of that, the Mike Budenholzer, for some reason, he's decided to just really rely so heavily on his starting five. You know, he hasn't gone as deep to his bench as the Phoenix Suns have. I think that's something that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks for the Bucks. I know Connington, he actually had a solid game. He had 14 points off the bench, and he actually played some pretty big minutes. He played 34 minutes off the bench. But then you look at Bobby Portis, who people have kind of been raving about throughout these playoffs, how he's sort of how he's played well throughout the playoffs, and he only played like 5 minutes.
How
2 points?
How does he only play 5 minutes? 4 minutes and 4 minutes and 30 seconds. How? It doesn't make sense. Now, yes, I know Paul and Booker were trying to match up to him, and you know they not so abused him, you know, but they made him look bad on so many shots. But look, that's Chris Paul and Devin Booker. They're going to do that to some of the best defenders. Now, what the Bucks have to do is take advantage of Bobby Portis on the offensive end. You know, pound the ball to Bobby because he can score. You know, he was crucial in Game 6 and Game 7 against the Atlanta Hawks. So I'm not sure what Mike Budenholzer is thinking.
Yeah, and they definitely could have used that in the second quarter because they only put up like 16 points. And I mean, Milwaukee for them, as odd as it sounds, as weird as we're saying how, like, you know, we're picking apart this team and why they didn't win. I mean, they were in the game for the most part. But they came out pretty hot.
It was really because of Giannis. You know, he kept them in the game, you know, 20 points in the third quarter. You know, I'm not sure how many more 20-point quarters Giannis has in the future of the NBA Finals. Look, he might do it, right? But that he needs some help badly. And, you know, the Devin Booker and Chris Paul are a handful for the Bucks, pretty much, you know. And they're making use of that mid-range game. You know, the Bucks were doing a little better with their pick-and-roll defense in Game 2 than in Game 1, where Game 1, they just got destroyed. You know, they had the Bucks confused. You know, Brook Lopez was dropping back, you know, staying up. They had them confused. But I do like that they did stick around. And, you know, maybe I don't want to say this finals is over, clearly, because I think the Bucks have been in this situation before. We've seen them here. They're going back to Milwaukee. I'll predict that they'll win game 3, which is taking place on Sunday. But this Suns team, you know, it's looking like your prediction of Suns in 6. That seems to be a likely scenario.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think Milwaukee does come away with a game 3 victory. I think they're a team that definitely, like, what's the saying I'm looking for? Feeds off of that home court atmosphere. Milwaukee is a tough place to play. And now that they've gotten 2 games under their butt against this Phoenix Suns team, I think they can go into Milwaukee being able to readjust and assess what they did wrong in these first 2 games. I know in game 1 they said that they needed to... They weren't aggressive enough in game 1. And then in game 2, you saw them, like, right out the gates. They were super aggressive. Jrue Holiday, he was putting up a lot of shots in the first quarter to start the game. And he's actually been shooting pretty poorly in these finals. So he needs to find his shot. Chris Middleton needs to find his shot. So, you know, being able to find that balance now of not being overly aggressive, but also not passing up shots either, and somehow finding a way to slow down Chris Paul and Devin Booker. I mean, I know Jrue Holiday is that two-way guy, but I mean, he can only do so much on the defensive end. Cause I mean, I think he still had a solid game on the defensive side of the ball in game 2, but I mean, it can't just all be him either.
No, definitely not. And I think that's where, you know, maybe, you know, it can be said perhaps he's exhausting so much more energy trying to chase Chris Paul and Devin Booker around. You know, which brings me to what I think is the X factor for me, what I think the X factor the rest of the way. And to me, I thought about picking one player for each team, or, you know, one statistic that I think each team should do. But I think for me, it's going to be a cliche thing, but I think it's something for both teams too. I think it's bench play, bench production, and it's something we just talked about in our last topic. And this is where I think the Suns have an advantage. You know, Monty Williams can go deeper into his bench, but I also think that he has that trust in those guys coming in off the bench. You know, everybody that played, you know, barring Torrey Craig, you know, Cameron Payne had just under 10 minutes, but everybody Everybody had more than 6 minutes, you know, but they all played minutes. They even had Frank Kaminsky got 1 minute of action, which we'll probably see more of him now that Torrey Craig got hurt, which we'll get into in our next topic. But the Bucks, you know, we talk about it. Mike Budenholzer, he is just sticking to that starting five and Pat Connaughton. Jeff T got 12 minutes. Bobby Portis, we all talked about it. He got 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Brian Forbes got 5 minutes, 30 seconds. You know, he's going to have to trust in his bench, and I think that's the X factor. You know, we've seen in past NBA finals where bench players will win the game for a team. You know, whether it's a home team or the road team, doesn't matter. You know, I think one famous example to me was the 2008 Boston Celtics when Big Baby Glenn Davis. Hey, he could be a bear. You know, he's cuddly too. So, yeah. But Big Baby Glenn Davis and Nate Robinson, they carried them to, I'm not sure if it was game 3 or game 4 or game against the Lakers. Yeah, they were on that. Yeah.
In a way, when they won?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Look it up.
Nate Robinson was on their team?
Nate Robinson, yeah. Nate Robinson.
Nate Robinson, like, dunk contest Nate Robinson?
Nate Robinson was on the Boston Celtics.
Was on the 08 team?
Yeah.
I know he was on the hang on. I gotta check this out.
He is Googling this fact that I just dropped. You know, I think it's an issue with some of you youngsters nowadays, you know, Alex. You know, you gotta trust us when we
I knew
say
he was on the
things.
Celtics, but he was a part of that.
Yeah, he was crucial coming off the bench.
In 2008 when they won.
Yeah. Oh man, now hope I'm right. Imagine if I'm wrong. This is recording. We're still recording. This is something we're checking as we're speaking.
No. He was in Boston in 2010.
Oh, and I'm wrong. See, wow. Now I have.
So you were kind of right.
I was kind of right.
In the 2010
but
finals. You were talking about. You meant the 2010.
2010 finals. Is what I meant. Well, see, I guess this is something we old people have. We're very brogacious, you know. We're very confident, you know. But
yeah, like hey, these young guys, you know. Well, hey, these young guys know a little thing or two, too, all right? So, okay.
I stand corrected. But I will take half credit and say he was on a 2010.
At the 2010 finals, not 2010. The 2008 finals.
But I think, you know, the point stance is that, you know, I think the bench production, somebody's going to have to step up on the bench. It's perhaps a player we're not even talking about right now. But I think, to me, that's my X factor going the rest of the way for both teams.
You know what? Actually, I kind of like that. I mean, car cliche or whatnot, but I think you make a very good point where Phoenix does have a bench, and I think it's the case where they haven't necessarily needed to utilize that bench. And I would argue they kind of had in a way. I think Cam Johnson is fantastic. He's like a nice little spark plug who has a very, very fine-looking jump shot. That man can shoot the ball. He went 2 for 4 from 3-point range and 8 points. Like, I mean, that's not bad. And Cameron Payne, we know that he has an ability to score, to get to the hoop. Excuse me. But also, too, like, both teams like to play up-tempo. And when Cameron Payne gets onto the floor, that man is running. Like, that man is hustling. So he definitely gives them also just another little spark plug. Not necessarily maybe scoring, but just maintaining that up-tempo rhythm for the Suns coming off the bench. And I think in that case, with the Bucks, they need to have a little bit more faith in that bench there. You got to be able to trust in Bobby Portis to get you production. Maybe Cunnington now that he put up 14 points. So, you know, maybe digging in there, per se. So, I mean, we'll see. And I haven't even said my damn X factor. But
X factor, speak on it.
And in all honesty, I would say my X factor. I guess I'll go the cliche route, but I'll just say it's one player. I'm looking at Mikal Bridges for the Phoenix Suns.
Interesting. What are the odds that he dropped 27 points and had a great game? And he. Let's be honest. He's had a great playoff run. Like, I know he's going to get a lot of talked about in the finals because of this game, but he's been doing it throughout the playoffs. You know, there haven't always been 20-point games, but he's been efficient at what he does, and he's made other impact plays and isn't just scoring. But
yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. You're taking the words right out of my mouth.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. It isn't just scoring, even though we did see it right here in game two. I mean, he grabs boards, whether it be on the offensive end, defensive end. I want to see he's more of a he'll grab more defensive boards. So that eliminates second chance scoring points, or second chance opportunities, I'm sorry, for the Milwaukee Bucks. And that generates, you know, offense for the Suns trying to get up the floor. Like we always say, they're an up-tempo team trying to get in transition. He'll create those spots for the Phoenix Suns. And, you know, just on the offensive end, he's another weapon that Milwaukee has to worry about. So if he needs to hit a corner three or drive to the basket, he can draw defenders in and kick it out to whether it be Devin Booker, Chris Paul, Jay Crowder, you know, all those guys can shoot. So, you know, he just opens up the floor so much for Phoenix. And I want to say too, I think he's a solid defender. Like, he ain't bad.
He uses his God-given talent, which is his length. You know,
he's got long arms,
you know, so that does affect. As somebody who has long arms, trust me, that's something people hate on me whenever I'm guarding them, because my arms are very long. I have selfie stick arms, you know, so. But here's what I want to bring back, my X factor, and it kind of leads into our next topic. The bench is going to be an X factor, and I think Phoenix Suns are going to have to dig even deeper, because they're going to have to deal with two injuries that picked up in game one. Dario Saric, and I practiced this and I messed it up. Dario Saric got hurt in game one. He was giving them solid minutes off the bench. You know, it wasn't always a lot of points, but when they needed him to score, they would just, you know, dumping down low to him, or, you know, he even shot the three. But he got hurt in game one. But so that opened up the play time for more players. In steps in Torrey Craig. Torrey Craig, you know, he got hurt in game two. And when we first made our rundown for what this episode was going to be, we had Torrey Craig on there even before game two tipped off. Alex, why do we have Torrey Craig on there?
So Torrey Craig, the reason why we wanted to talk about him is that he is in a very unique, very awesome scenario where he's going to get a ring no matter the outcome of this NBA Finals. Because earlier in the season, he played for the Milwaukee Bucks. And I want to say around the trade deadline ish, or if not, you know, at the trade deadline, he was traded to Phoenix. So he played the first half of the season with Milwaukee, and the second half, obviously, you know, currently right now with the Phoenix Suns. So that makes him eligible for whoever wins this finals. Like, he's getting a ring because he was on both teams, you know, for each half of the season.
Yeah, you know, and unfortunately for Craig, you know, he took a bump trying to guard Giannis, and he picked up a knee injury. And, you know, at the time of recording, there's no update on his injury. It did not look good. I know Monty Williams said, look, Torrey Craig is a tough guy, so if he was down, it has to be serious. You know, here's hoping for the best. But, you know, I also want to talk about Torrey Craig, you know, because here's an NBA journeyman that grinded his way to the NBA, not unlike P.J. Tucker, you know, who's having success with the Milwaukee Bucks. But, you know, we do want to congratulate Torrey Craig, who will be a 2021 NBA champion regardless of who wins. And look, it's happened before. The last time it happened was in 2015, 2016, when Anderson Varejão played for the Cleveland Cavaliers, that was traded to Golden State Warriors, and then the Cavaliers ended up winning the title. And I think that was the 3-1 comeback, if I'm not mistaken. So Anderson didn't win a ring, but the Cavaliers offered him a ring, and he turned it down. And I bring that up because I imagine most players would turn down a ring in that opportunity. Would you turn down a ring, Alex, if you're on the losing team, but you qualify because you played with the losing team in the NBA Finals?
I don't know. I think I'd still might keep it. I mean, you know, a ring is a ring. Like, but I get the meaning behind it too. It's like you weren't with that winning team when they won, so I kind of get the you didn't actually win the ring, but it's like, hey, you know what? How many people can say that they have an NBA championship ring, you know, however you get it. So I mean,
the
I don't know.
The athlete and the competitive person in me sense, no, I don't want that ring, right? Because I didn't earn that ring. I was part of it in the beginning, but they let me go for a reason. They didn't consider me worthy to be on their championship team, right? That's the competitive person in me. Yeah. You know, and I want to come back harder the next year. But the business side of me says, I can take that ring and flip it. You know, I don't have to keep it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could turn that ring, start a bit. You know, like, that's worth some money to somebody, you know?
Right. I just think if you keep the ring, it's more of a or less of a risk. I feel like this is that subject or that dilemma we talked about in my philosophy class freshman year.
Ooh, tell us.
So it was, what is it? I think it was a scenario where you had two boxes. You're in a room with two boxes. One box was $1 million, and then the other box was $100,000. And then you had a person that would tell you what's in each box. So the $100,000 was guaranteed, and then the $1 million was like a 99% chance that you would get it. So the question was, which box would you take? So the person would go look at the boxes and tell you like what's in it. And it could be whoever, like, I mean, if it's someone you completely trust or a random person, whatever. But odds are, like, there's $1 million in one box, but there's a chance that there isn't. So if you go for that box, there's a chance that you can end up with no money. But if you go with $100,000, they could guarantee that regardless. So in the argument, I said I would roll with the $100,000 because I'm guaranteed that money no matter what, even though there's the odds are I'm still getting $1 million. But if there's that one chance that I don't get it, then I'm out. Like, I don't get any money. So when I look at this ring scenario, it's like, okay, if you turn down the ring, yeah, there's a chance that you can come back and win it on your own. But then, hey, just circumstances that come with sports, and especially in the NBA, you know, you may not get another opportunity to get a ring. So, I mean, however I get it, I'd rather just take the ring, whether or not I truly earned it, and I get the, you know, the competitiveness, the competitive nature behind it. But I probably might just roll with the ring because, hey, I don't know if I'm ever going to get another chance with it. At least here, it's guaranteed that someone's handing it over to me.
That's my business side of it sees it that way too. Is, you know, and from an NBA player perspective, especially if you're an NBA journeyman, you know, who's to say that after this season, the Suns don't trade him, you know? Well, granted, he's hurt. Hopefully, he comes back. You know, this story, Craig, topic started because of we wanted to talk about this peculiar situation he's in. But we do hope he makes a comeback this finals because, like I said, he has grinded his way. But we also want to talk about Dario Saric and Torrey Craig and the impact that's going to have on the Suns. You know, they were able to withstand it here in Game 2, Alex. And that's why I was talking about the X factor now for the Suns is – they're going to have to get some bench player, which we've seen Monty Williams trust his bench. But the impact of not having Torrey Craig and Dario Saric, I think that's what will help the Bucks going forward in their favor, unless somebody from the Suns bench steps up. You know, but somebody who stepped up the whole playoffs, so that's where I'll take this, you know. Trae Young is a player that stepped up in these whole playoffs, and he lifted the Atlanta Hawks along with Clint Capela, John Collins. I'm blacking out on the Red Mamba, as I called him in, you know, one of the last episode. You know, they carried the Atlanta Hawks to the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, so that's our
Huerter or Huerter.
There we go, Huerter. But that's our last topic for this episode: is the Atlanta Hawks Eastern Conference Finals run. Yes, we know we're all in deep into NBA Finals, but we didn't get a chance to properly send them a goodbye in this NBA season, and they gave us a hell of a playoff run to watch, Alex.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I want to say you and I both had them getting bounced in the first round by the Knicks, and they ended up making an Eastern Conference Finals run, and I honestly don't think anybody expected the Atlanta Hawks to make the run that they did except the Atlanta Hawks and their fans. Like, that's
pretty much that's it.
Like, if you said that, oh, I had them making a run, like, you're probably
Bull.
Lying, bro.
Bull.
Like, I call BS on that. All right, that's different from my take with the Phoenix Suns. Like, there were some murmurs going on with the Phoenix Suns being a really good team this year. But no one was talking about the Atlanta Hawks like that at all. And they had the whole coaching situation where they actually kind of sucked in the first like quarter or so of the season. And then Nate McMillan comes in and all of a sudden he is the golden goose that they needed to really turn things around. And now he gets an extension, which is well deserved, because I mean, for a while it looked like the Hawks weren't even going to make the playoffs, and you know, they were a couple wins away from making the finals, and a lot of that is in part to Nick McMillan coming on as the head coach. So yeah, definitely just the Atlanta Hawks are a very exciting team to look out for moving forward, because they are young and they are led by a man named Young, and that's Trae Young.
Trae Young. You know, but before I get into Trae Young, I do want to talk about Nate McMillan, because, and rightly so, the Atlanta Hawks removed the interim tag. So now he's their coach. I think they gave him a 4-year deal, if I'm not mistaken. And look, it's well-deserved. You know, well-deserved action by the Hawks front office. And I think from an article that I was reading is they knew they were going to do it, but they just didn't want to do it, so it didn't take away from the run that the Hawks were in. So it was already in the plans, which, duh, right? Like, why wouldn't you bring back the guy that brought you from the bottom? You know, because they were not in a playoff position. That's why they let go of their previous coach. But I like what you said, and you hit upon it. You know, they're a fun team to watch. I think they're primed to be a top contender in the East next season. I would not be surprised to see them get a top four finish. And the reason why I say this is because they're going to have so much momentum from this run that, like you said, nobody expected. You know, we counted them out in the first round. We counted them out in the second round. When we finally said, okay, we're on the bandwagon. Let's go Hawks to the final. Trae Young, Ice Trae, especially with Antetokounmpo down. And, you know, they couldn't put it off, you know. But also, Trae Young was hurt, and I don't think he was 100%. 100% Trae Young definitely changes that series. But I think this run that they were on this season is just going to help them out next season. And it has to be said, they were without one of their other young studs in DeAndre Hunter. He missed the playoffs completely. So he's another young player that they have coming back next season. So the Hawks are never going to be a contender in the East. But now to the man you brought up, Ice Trae Young. He's taking that next level. And I think that there's a lot more Atlanta Hawks fans right now. There's a lot more Trae Young fans. And it's all because of this playoffs run this year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I'll admit, I was not, like, super high on Trae Young coming into the NBA. I was one of those where I was like, you know, he's overrated. Like, he can score. Like, there was some talent there. Like, I'm not going to deny that.
You're but not I the only thought, one. Like, there were a lot of, you know, other NBA media guys around the media landscape, the national media, that said the same thing. So you were not alone in that assessment.
Yeah, I just thought, like, his game fit perfect for college. That's where I saw it, where everyone saw it transcend or just, you know, impress everybody. But I wasn't sure how that would translate into the NBA. It wasn't necessarily his size per se, because I mean, we've seen a lot of guys his size succeed well. I just didn't think that scoring would translate into the NBA, but it has, and even more so. So I was completely wrong on that. I was just kind of like, it didn't look like he's gonna do much. And everyone was saying, like, Dallas won that trade, swapping him and Trae Young. And now it looks like a super even trade. Like, nobody lost that trade. Like, whoever they were going to decide with was a win-win scenario. So, yeah, man, Trae Young is definitely, I would say, now where I flipped. And I think he really is a young superstar in this league. And I think, you know, when the LeBrons head out and all that, like, he's going to be one of the faces in this league.
I think he already is a face of this league based on this playoff run. You know, let's be honest. People, for some reason, are attracted to villains in sports, you know. And I say attracted not that, we like them, but we like to follow them. You know, we like to follow villains just because we know, they're going to do something, you know. And I think Trae Young became that, especially in the East Coast against the New York Knicks. So I cannot wait for the next Hawks next game. I think that's going to be a fun rivalry, especially if the Knicks keep up. But anyways, back to Trae Young. No, I think he's ascended that step. Now it comes hard. Now he needs to stay there, right? Because we've seen many players make that ascension to that step and then not be able to stay there. And they end up just being back to being a really good player, but not being a you know, all-star MVP. Because I think I wouldn't be surprised if we see Trae Young maybe have one year where he can have an MVP-type year, you know, an Allen Iverson-type year carrying the team. I mean, this was an Allen Iverson-type year's playoff run for him. You know, he almost got them to the NBA Finals. But, yeah, so, you know, shout-out to the Atlanta Hawks and Trae Young. And Clint Capella, too, just because I know I saw him grow up here with the Houston Rockets. But I have one more question to ask you before we leave this week's episode of the Basketball Fiends. Alex, did you watch that last episode of Loki?
Yes, I did. That one was cool.
That one was cool. I feel like, and I think this is what you could say for every Marvel show on Disney Plus, is every episode is just a little better than the last. You know, just a little better than the last. You know, and this was one of those moments where it's just led to this. You know, it's led to this episode. A lot of the footage we saw in the trailer we're finally seeing now. You know, Mobius driving around. You know, the other multiple Lokis. You know, so it was a fun episode and a very explosive episode as well.
Yeah, that alligator Loki threw me off so much, because when they first showed those variant Lokis in at the end of episode 4, I didn't even notice it at first. I was just kind of like, oh, they have like a little lizard thing and they just threw some horns on it. And then as episode 5 goes, they're like, no, he's an actual Loki. I was like, get the hell out of here. Like, what the hell is an alligator? Like, it's an alligator. Like, why is this animal like a variant of Loki? Like, that's just so completely like bizarre. And freaking dude like stole the show.
Yeah, he did. You know, he was the kind of person that where he was like, on sight, I will fight you. You know, like he bit off Loki's arm. He bit off the other, you know, brogadacious Loki. I can't remember. Boastful Loki, as some people are calling him. But no, it was a very fun episode. And, you know, a great ending that I just like, I can't wait for next Wednesday. Like, I just want to see, you know, I know people are all, you know, on YouTube, they're all the... Not conspiracy theorists, I'll say, without people trying
the episode breakdowns.
The episode breakdowns and the Easter eggs, which I will admit, I will watch some of them when I have time.
I watch those. They're so cool.
Those are cool. But, you know, everybody's anticipating Kang the Destroyer is the ultimate guy we'll see at
Kang the Destroyer, Kang the Conqueror.
Kang the Conqueror. You know, he said this destroyer too. I don't care. But, yeah. But Kang. Yeah, whatever. Him. The boy, you know, he'll be the end. But
what is it going? You know, honestly, I have a hot take, and ooh, I feel like
bring it on.
A lot of people, I don't think Loki is the best Disney Plus Marvel show. I would say it's actually like, not that it's bad, like I still enjoy it, but it's like my least favorite. I would put it behind Falcon and Winter Soldier and WandaVision.
Interesting. Okay, it's funny you bring that up, because I was thinking as I finished the last Loki episode, I was thinking, where does this rank in the shows we've seen so far? Because each one has been so different and so unique. It's also very hard to judge them. I don't know. We'll come back to this topic after we see the finale of Loki. But that's interesting, you know, because who knows? Maybe the finale turns you around and you're like, wow, this is.
Yeah, you know, that's true. That's true, but like so far, I'm just like, it's fun. It's been fun. It's such a, you know, each show, like you said, is unique in its own way, has its own identity. But I've had some people where they're just like, oh, Loki's like the best Disney Plus show, like out of all the Marvel shows, and I'm just kind of like, no.
I feel
good, but it's not that good.
I feel like that's just because it's the fresh one. You know, when WandaVision was on, it was like, oh, this is so great. You know, this is gonna be the best show, and it was. It was really unique. You know, and arguably, no, might be my best one so far. But then Falcon and Winter Soldier came on. People were like, oh, this is great. You know, buddy comedy. You know, it's this and that, and which was a great show again too. You know, a different show from WandaVision.
Like, they've all been great. It's bad.
Exactly. So, but I think maybe because it's new. You know, once we take a break, because I don't think we have any more MCU shows coming up, right? Because then we have Black Widow coming out, and then I think there's no more MCU shows, at least for a while, maybe in the fall.
Got What If.
Oh, What If.
Yeah, What If.
What If. That's right. When does
that one looks cool.
That one looks cool.
August 11th.
Oh, wow. See? And then when
they dropped a new trailer.
And then whenever What If comes out, people are going to be like, What If is the best MCU show on Disney Plus? You know, I bet you anything we're going to see that. yeah, there it is. But so what are your plans for this weekend, Alex, as we wrap up another Basketball Fiends episode for R Esquina Podcast Networks? Check us out, resquina.com.
Subscribe and check out all our stories, because we always got stuff cooking. So this weekend, damn it. See, like last time I was like, oh, I actually got something to say. Like I'm going to a Fire game, which I went to, and then now like I don't know if I have anything planned this weekend. I guess I don't know. Well, I got a story that I'm working on, so probably just working on that.
I will be parking my behind on the sofa watching some soccer games and obviously the NBA finals. But we got the Copa America final on Saturday, Brazil. Ooh, versus Argentina. I got Argentina. We need Messi. Ooh, Messi needs a trophy. We need it.
He needs it.
He just needs it.
I'm with you.
Let's go. Let's go.
I need him to win a trophy.
Let's go, Argentina. So I got that. And then on Sunday, I got Italy versus England. I got to watch the Euro 2020 finals. And I haven't decided. I've been putting for Italy the whole way. Italy and Denmark, actually. I've been putting for Italy and Denmark. Same. And I was not happy to see that penalty in, you know, Denmark versus England. So, but yeah. I'm not sure. I wouldn't be opposed if we went to England just so it can go back home and they can shut up about it, you know?
Honestly, that when you put it that way, it's kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, that way we can just like, all right, it's home now. Shut up.
It's home, whatever. Right? But I've been a fan of Italy. And how they've come back. So I don't know. That's a toss up. I just hope it's a good game. And then of course, you know, we got game three, so that should be good. So but yeah, so that'll be my weekend. But
nah, I got Italy. Screw that. Because I wanted Denmark. I got Italy.
There you go. I know what. I'll go ahead and make a prediction. I'm gonna say just to be contrarian, I'm gonna say England takes it, and it goes home. There you go. Great. Now shut up, Britain. All right.
Of course, Harry Kane wants to show up for England. Well, not that he didn't show up for Tottenham, but now he wants to leave. And I'm just kind of like, It is what it is.
And with that, we finish another episode of The Basketball Fiends. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. See ya.
Deuces.